The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
We're into club weekend, lads. Are we excited about this? It's hard to know whether we're even excited about it, because I'm going to read a quote from Kieran Fitzgerald. Conor and Conan are here with me in studio, and he makes a good point, right? So we all know Kieran Fitzgerald is coming up against Kevin Cassidy this weekend when Gweedore play Cara Finn, which is really the game of the weekend. And we'll talk about that in part three. But I'm always complaining about this big long break, kind of from a preparation point of view, and it's really difficult and you lose momentum and everything. And like, I mean, he's spelling it out from a different kind of perspective. He says, from a GAA point of view, before Christmas, it's all club. County finals, provincial finals dominate what's happening at the time. Then all of a sudden, it just stops. And when it comes back, it gets lost. And he couldn't make it any clearer. We're in inter-county mode here now. Mm. Do you know, we're on a break from inter-county. The league has just started. The idea that the club has just been shoehorned in here, it doesn't make sense from any kind of perspective. Marketing, from the players' perspective, from supporters' perspective. Like what Kieran says, if that was played the week before Christmas in Croke Park, so you never have a problem with the pitch. The pitch is going to be immaculate, mm-hmm. no matter what. The semi-finals are played at the start of December. Is there any difference between the start of December and the weather now? None. Mm-hmm. So it loses momentum with fans. Another brilliant thing about the week before Christmas in Croke Park is all the families that come home from abroad for Christmas can go and see that. Do you know what I mean? That would miss it from at another point of the year. And like, it does just get lost. It's just, it's in a new year and we've moved on from club. Yeah. It's kind of, it feels like club should be done for last year, and now here we are with a semi-final.
What a great Christmas tradition that could be as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Marketingly, come home for the finals.
And come home for the final. Yeah. Like, I mean, like AIB do a good job sponsoring it. I'm sure they'd go to town on that. Yeah. They'd be at Dublin Airport doing the whole home for Christmas.
Yeah.
Home.
Yeah. Yeah. This way, like,
there's a show for us to do. Like.
Yeah. And then families could just, that could become their Christmas tradition, even if it's like a Donegal team or whatever in the final. Just go to Dublin for the weekend, and that's your sort of Christmas get together with your family. You're going to the Ireland final, and I'm sold on it. Let's go.
Sold on it. Yeah. Well, if Conan's sold on it, this is a this is a runner.
Yeah, 100%
so there's no, that's it. So that's what Kieran Fitzgerald was talking about. So we're looking forward to these, and we'll talk to him in part three. Another bit of news was the GEA. So we criticised the GEA a lot, but this is a brilliant initiative that, in conjunction with the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, they've launched a GEA digital archive. So they launched that at Croke Park. So they're showing online 113 finals since 1961. So, and provincial finals from 1961 also feature. So, like, I mean, this is brilliant. I haven't used it yet. The archive also includes the All-Ireland Club final since 1989. So, like, I mean, there's a couple of matches I would have been involved in there that I might not like to look back on. And there's one or two that I might... No mention of the minor All-Ireland from 96. Where can I go to watch it? But anyways, in all, over 500 football and hurling matches were retrieved from broadcasters, and they're stuck up on GAA.ie, I'm pretty sure. Mm. And that's just fantastic. Like, I mean, any time you want. There's games in the 80s I don't have a good memory of, especially hurling. I have a vague memory of Galway in the late 80s. And then I lost hurling a little bit until 95 when Clare came along. But like, I mean, just to look back and refresh your memory if you're bored. Like, I'd even like a highlights package of them that you might not have to watch that the whole game.
The only thing wrong with this is that it starts in 1961.
Yeah,
so for Mayo fans, it misses out by 10 years.
You miss it out by 10 years.
It's nearly be penance for Mayo fans to go back and watch every single final. And if you're particularly bad, you have to watch the 2004 and 2006 finals.
Oh, jeez, yeah. You need to swerve these. But you could watch the Drawn Mead game at least.
Exactly,
and go, jeez, you'd never know what might happen in the replay. So you've 93, Conan. Is there anywhere you could watch? I'm sure you have the DVD at home, have you?
Oh, I do have the DVD at home. You have the books at home. Like, you know, that's the only thing you really celebrate still from Derry. Like, 98 was the last Ulster, so like 93 still very much. That was that team as well that's done it. But I think 58 was an All-Ireland final, so 93 is the one. But I would go back and, like, I've watched that on YouTube. Like, you know, I'm watching like 2002 final at the minute, and you're going into part one and part two on YouTube,
which is annoying.
Yeah, annoying. You can just get it all here, like, with proper commentary and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So that's fantastic. So the GAA deserve credit there. So Paul Flynn has been talking, and we mentioned this already. So Motion 31 that's going to Congress. Congress is coming up soon, lads. I think we're a week away. So the countdown is on. So we should have a countdown clock to Congress. So Motion 31 is that the GPA are requesting an input into issues that are related to inter-county hurling and football competition. So they want a seat on the CCCC. I couldn't agree more. I think this is a no-brainer for the GPA. I think that if the GPA have a representative on that, I don't think the issue with Kieran Malloy and Liam Silk will be happening this weekend. That goes without saying. I think, in actual fact, the CCCC should be held to account for why they allowed that fixture mess to happen again. And he should be held to account by Tom Ryan, who didn't seem too kind of bothered with it last Friday when I was talking. Mm. These are all issues that really frustrate people and are player welfare issues, and that's what the GPA are defending. I like Paul Flynn's style. I think he's combative. I've said that before. I think Dermot Earley is a much nicer, I don't mean nicer in a bad way, I think Dermot Fitzgerald would be less confrontational than Paul Flynn, or Dermot Earley
Early,
I think he would be less confrontational. I think Paul Flynn doesn't take any shit, and he's going for a $6 Ireland, and that holds weight. And I think when he puts his foot down and stuff, I'd be interested to see. Then again, this is a motion going to Congress to ask administrators at Congress to give up a little bit of their power.
That's the problem.
For the whippersnappers of the GPA. So you have to wonder, you know, whether this would pass.
Good luck with that. Like, it's interesting. Like, Jamie Clark was saying during the week, he just had a sort of throwaway comment, but it was about Armagh's sort of training to games ratio. And, you know, we always talk about that as well. They're training far more than they're playing games. But so in the middle of all this madness where there's too many games and too much crossover, there's a lot of players then who, like, the sort of collateral damage is they're not playing anything and just waiting around until their game can come around.
Who would that be now, sorry?
So, like, say, Jamie Clark's talking about, like, having to train more than play games, you know, which a lot of players feel that as well. So even though, like, there's so many games and we're trying to squash them all into 12 months, what happens is, like, Jamie Clark and whoever, like, the inter-county players or the club players, they're told, just wait. Just wait and wait and train and train, and then you can play your match. And so that's happening in the middle of all this chaos too.
Yeah.
People aren't playing enough games, where some people are playing too many games.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. But anyways, I actually think this motion is a little bit irrelevant, because we know the whole thing is being reviewed. The Super 8 ends, its third year ends next year. So at the end of this year, ahead of its last year, it's going to be reviewed. And the CPA, the GPA, and the third level, Tom Ryan said that this is going to happen, John Horan's on record for saying this is going to happen, are all going to discuss the way forward for this. If that goes forward and everybody gets their bit in, I don't think the GPA will necessarily need to sit on the CCCC, because the problem here is the structure of the championship and the crossover. And if that's fixed, it would be no harm having the GPA on it anyways.
Yeah.
Do you know, for the to make sure there's no overlap. But if the structure is fixed, well, then I don't see this being as big an issue.
Yeah, maybe I'd love to be a fly in the wall at that meeting when all the parties come together, because there's so many kind of interests to be catered for. But you made a good point there about Paul Flynn and the GPA, that, like, he seems to be a more disruptive might be the wrong word, but GPA should be a disruptive body. It should not be pally-pally with the GAA, and there are probably accusations over the last few years that it's become too much that way. So as you said, with there's been signs with Paul Finn, there's been a couple of things where there's the rule changes before.
The rule changes,
the
he demanded a meeting,
exactly.
demanded
and
a
this.
Meeting with Horan, and I said he hasn't a hope of getting that hand-pass thing thrown out, and not the GPA had any input into that. That was Central Council voted that down. But the whole thing, like, he wasn't taking this lying down, even though I strongly disagreed that they should have just left it go.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But
more than we've seen before.
Yeah.
It's definitely more than we've seen before. I think that's a very positive thing. I have this headline on this one, Connor, that this is good news for Mayo. So here's Mikey Sheedy on going for five in a row. So we know Kerry were going for five in a row. It was 82 or 83? 82 finals, Seamus Darby.
Yeah.
That's another one we can look back on the archive, lads. So Kerry won't be doing it anyways. He says, I'm only talking about myself. Now, this is the final against Offaly. I'm only talking about myself, but it does get into your psyche. I missed a penalty at a crucial point in the game. I would have said that day, I just didn't feel right myself. And I kind of felt it was from tension. I felt drained. I felt after about 10 minutes into the game, Jesus Christ, I have done no training for this game, or have I done any training for this game or what? I was stuck to the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fairy tale stuff for Mayo, Kerry, you need to do, you need to be in that final. Because you'll paint this picture that we know the Dublin are great champions, and I actually came out of the game. I didn't say this on Monday of the Kerry game. After that game against Kerry, I had more admiration for Dublin than I had for Kerry. Going down to Kerry's home ground in front of all their home supporters, and they treating this almost like a championship match and tearing into them. And Kerry were by far the better team. Mm. Beat Dublin by a point. Mm-hmm. By a skin of the teeth. And this is Dublin only back 4 weeks. Like, they're champions. They fight for, like, and this is after winning four in a row. And it's just a league game. It's the third one. You're not fully fit. And they still gave it to Kerry. You know what I mean? Put huge doubts in Kerry's mind. So, like, after that game, I was like, my God, what champions they are. Like, they really, really are. But this is the point I'm making, is that in the last 10 minutes, if the final 2 years ago, Lee Keegan scores that goal, Dublin going for five in a row, Mayo would have won that game.
You think
because
so?
Because Mayo shit themselves when they got to that point. Yeah, Dublin didn't. Yeah. But now you'll have Mayo and Dublin shitting themselves.
Well, Mayo shitting themselves nearly a guarantee.
Now they'll both shit themselves. So, then Mayo, what did that Lee Keegan goal put Mayo up? One or two?
2 points.
There you go. Both teams shitting themselves at equal amounts. Mayo win by 2 points, right?
Well, I hope you're right. I hope your theory is proved right. But you're right. Like, the only thing I'll say about Dublin is that final was what? Was that the first three in a row in how long? And then in 2020.
Oh, that was a three in a row, right? But five in a row has never been done.
I know, five in a row is completely different. And the year before, they'd won back-to-backs with the same manager for the first time, I think, since 1990. So it's not as if, like, milestones, Dublin have passed them by already, and they haven't proved to be a burden. But this is, as you said, this has never been done before. This is bigger. And as much as, like, the theme of this year is going to be Jim Gavin being asked about the five in a row and saying that... Which never mentioned.
Liverpool in the title race.
That's going to be the theme of this year. But the thing is, like, when it's asked repeatedly, there's like it has to get into their heads.
It has to. And like the Kilkenny team that couldn't be beaten didn't do it.
Tipperary
pipped them. Now Tipperary are a very good team coming, but Mayo are a very good team and Kerry are a very good team coming. Do you know what I mean? It's a very difficult thing to do. Like that Kerry team in '82 could not be beaten by that Offaly team. They couldn't. But Mikey Sheedy was stuck to the ground because of the pressure.
I'm pretty sure you're not going to have. I think they. Like Kerry had songs about five in a row, t-shirts five
t-shirts.
In a row. You're definitely not going to have that about Dublin.
We should make them up, right?
Mayo for Sam on the back, then.
Start handing them out for free in the streets. Dublin are getting ahead of themselves.
Oh, jeez. If Mayo or Kerry don't start doing that, like, just be on a Connell Bridge, Dublin Supporters Club banner, and we're handing out the.
Shirts already in the bag. Here you go.
I'm on the phone after this podcast is over.
Okay, well, I have the. This down as the honeymoon is over for Carlo. So we talked briefly about Carlo at the weekend or on Monday, and they scored 5 points with a gale force wind. Galway scored 4 points with a gale force wind, and we're just talking about how ridiculous being married to that system is. It just shows how inflexible it is and how they have blinkers on, that with a really strong wind you're still retreating back in and you're not forcing the game and you're not trying to bloody run up a big score, that you can absolutely play that style counter-attack against the wind. But anyways, so Sean Gannon was being interviewed in the Carlow Nationalist. So some of the supporters were a little bit pissed off watching the game, that Carlow weren't making the most of the wind, or they were, instead of chasing the game, remember Laois are 4 points down and they're still waiting inside their 45. Yeah. Laois are just playing around outside them. So Carlow fans, while they were probably really excited about the initial improvement, which is brilliant, now they might want to go to Dr. Cullen Park in Division 3 and go, let's go out and try and let's try and win this game, or even look like you win this game. But anyway, Sean Gannon isn't taking it lying down, because he was asked about this and he says that's their issue. He said they don't see the bigger picture. We want to win games and that's how you do it. Well, it's not how you do it based on the loss against Longford. He said you suck defences out so you can find space in behind. He said that's the modern game. People may not understand it, but it's tactically sensible, so we're willing to do it. We understand about sucking out defences and playing the ball around the outside. Usually that's what teams will be doing to Carlow. But at the same time, supporters won't stand for you doing that when you've got a gale force wind with you. Like, I mean, you have to go and give your supporters something to shout about. So this patient game, you need to go in 5 or 6 points up with a gale force wind. And that system, if you're dropping off lads and not actually trying to force it and putting your kick out short and working the ball slowly up the field...
Yeah.
You can understand why the supporters would be kind of going, ah, here, what's going on here?
Yeah. You'd wonder, like there's some supporters, though, that'll always, they'll see 15 men.
Oh, and they want to drive it in.
Kick it in, drive it in, you know. So, like, I'm sure there's loads of Carlo supporters that have kind of, that you know, just want a bit more sophistication to the game than they currently bring at the moment.
Flexibility, is what I would call it.
In fairness, Sean Gannon has to be on message. Do you know what I mean? He can't really say, well, I'd love to do this. Do you know what I mean? If Turlough O'Brien is.
They're one panel that seemed to very believe in it, like they all come out fighting with it, like, you know.
Well, they seem convinced as well as just having to be on message. But like, I think what it's shown against Leash last year, and what it probably shown against Longford the last, is that this system will get you to a certain level, and it won't get you beyond it. So if you're happy to be, you know, maintain at that level, well, then fair enough. But when it comes to the bigger days and more important games, I think this is going to go against them in the long run.
Yeah, because we had Keane was at the Meath game, and he said Meath and Armagh. Meath would be a defensive-ish team, but not extremely. But he said that when they played with the wind, Armagh pinned Meath in, and Meath pinned them in, and didn't let them out of half. Would not let them out of half. Yeah. Whereas a defensive team will let you out of half and this is the point we were making, is that with the wind, surely you have to change it a little bit. Well,
you made a brilliant point about that on Monday, actually, and I was just thinking as a defender myself,
trying to get out.
When teams pin you in against a strong wind, it is the worst thing ever. It's so energy sapping. Morale, it just saps your morale.
Hand pass is tough as well.
But even a hand pass is hard. Yeah. Who am I going to get? And you're desperate for someone. Show. I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
I think it's just being married so much to this, instead of going, lads, go out, and like, you have to play the conditions at times as well, and like, there's the flexibility is the word I was using,
and I agree with that as well. It's a bit harsh from the fans, though. I think they're a newly promoted team. They got 3 points in 3 games, and Longford are top. Like, Carlow were 2 points off the bottom. They're 1 point off promotion. So I don't know. Like, they're playing above themselves at the minute.
And they are. I think it must have been the wind thing, because I do agree that the supporters should be more on side and not be that fickle, because it has been a very good start from Carlow. But it must have been the wind. It must have been, Jesus, lads,
do something with
get it down the field a little bit. You know what I mean? Quicker. That's the only. I wasn't at the game. It's the only thing I can think of. So here's this other one. So when did this 100 game club become a thing, right? So we have Ryan Jones. So this is the first time I've come across this. So I always know, isn't it Tomás and Mark O'Shea have the two, or Sean Kavanagh has the most championship appearances, which is unbelievably impressive. Cluxton might go one ahead of him this year.
He's ahead of him already.
Right, so Cluxton might never be beaten. Then Sean Kavanagh, then you have the two O'Sheas. So I can understand championship. Now there's a thing where the 100 time to line out for your county. So league and championship. I'm not sure there's a Burn Cup could even, I don't know.
It probably does.
Probably does. So anyways, Ryan Jones, after the Kildare game, tweeted out, an honour to wear the Fermanagh jersey for the 100th time. Couldn't have asked for a better result. Thanks for all the texts and best wishes. Right? You have Benny Kavanagh from Carlow, also made his 100th appearance. Tweet, proud to wear the Carlow jersey for the 100th time. Who even counts this?
They have to be told.
Yeah. Not our day, but we go again. And then he puts up a Carlow flag. So then I'm reading another one. So Liam McLoon, Paddy McGrath are on the verge of, this was in the Hogan Stand, are on the verge of joining the likes of Michael Murphy, Carol Lacey, Christy Toy, Colin McFadden, Brian Roper in Donegal's exclusive Century Club. Right? I'd never heard of this Century Club before, and I work in GEA, right? So there's a possibility that Boat, who won All-Irelands, will make their 100 games against Fermanagh on the weekend after next. So we're now anticipating 100 appearances. And now the tweet comes out. Have I been going around with blinkers on, lads, or when did this become a thing? Has Twitter made this kind of possible?
Those are the first ones I think I've seen. But I was thinking, you mentioned championship appearances there, because I was thinking, okay, well, how hard would it be to kind of rack up 100 games for your county, right? And you probably play, if you went injury free and you played kind of pre-season games, league games, a couple of championship games, you'd probably reach it in about 6 seasons or something like that.
Well,
you have seven
league games.
Yeah.
You might have two Burn Cup guaranteed. So that's 9, and you have 2 championship guaranteed. That's 11.
Yeah.
So you do need 10. You probably
suppose,
need 10
yeah,
years. Now,
yeah.
Oh, that's the minimum that you're playing per year. So, yeah. Like, I mean, you make a league semi-final, you make,
if
you
you're
win
in a couple
successful
of county, yeah, you could, in
you could get 13,
14. Seasons, yeah.
I suppose it's, look, but it's not a milestone, is it? I'd give 50 championship appearances would be a big
milestone. I thought the championship one was a big one, yeah.
The championship one has to be the big one.
This is going
to
be a bugbear of yours now along with the statements.
Oh yeah, I've my eye out now on these 100 club tweets.
This is actually the second time Paddy McGrath has come up for this, because at the start of the league before Donegal started their campaign, it was Paddy McGrath about to make his 100th appearance. So we had a false dawn back then, but now he must be fit again and ready to go. He didn't play the first game.
I blame the people counting. There's someone out there with too much time on their hands and they're counting appearances. Yeah. So like, I mean, imagine how painstaking and it will be just to count those appearances, going back through team sheets and, oh Christ,
not all team sheets are available as well.
No,
probably people have databases or something that give them alerts when people are on 99 or something. I know it's probably a sophisticated enough system, but
they need to get out more. Go and have a pint, drink a pint, go out on a Friday night. Right, I've this down, shakedown, right? So this just something doesn't fit with me with this Mayo thing, right? So Mayo are going to play in New York in Gaelic Park next May the 5th. So they've decided, right, we're going over to New York, there's loads of rich Irish people, and we're going to shake them down good and proper for their money, right? So the thousands of Mayo people are going over. So according to the Western People, they're doing a night, right? So it's on a gala night, a black tie gala night on Broadway. So it's the Mayo GAA International Supporters Foundation. Now we know that if Mayo go over there and think that their players are going to start showing up to this, we know what nearly happened Roscommon that time, wasn't it? When they were doing a little bit of stuff outside of preparing for the game. Now Mayo will still beat New York, so maybe they'll allow five or six of them go. But anyways, according to Western People, you've got sponsors packages available which cost $25,000 and $10,000 respectively. The Ruby sponsor package includes VIP seating for 9 people. So 9, 25 divided by 9, nearly $3,000 each. Just under $3,000 each. $3,000, right? So you might even get the same business owner paying the full $25,000.
I imagine so, yeah.
So seating for 9 people alongside a high profile player. And then for that $25,000, so you get to sit beside a 9 high profile player, prominent advertising space in the event journal. Sure, what good is that for all the Irish people coming over? Like, I mean, it depends. You're a construction company in America. Like, I mean, what good is that advertising to you?
Yeah.
Anyways, a signed team jersey. Brilliant. I'm being sarcastic. Special VIP special VIP gifts for guests and entry to the event after party, which the players will not be at, right?
Yeah.
So that's grand. So that's $25,000 for that. Right, no problem. Then supporters availing of the Emerald sponsor package will get seating for 9 or 10 guests, similar thing, depending on whether a player or former player is seated at the table. So, like, acknowledgements at the event journal, a signed jersey, gifts and entry to the after party. So you could play $10,000. You could have 9 people at the table with you, and you could have David Brady or someone stick to you. I mean, this is a shakedown of epic proportions. Now, I understand why they're doing it. I don't blame you. I've spent enough time out in America. This is why I don't like this. I've spent 5 summers out in America. I know the passion for Gaelic games over there. I know it's people who obsessive, the same as we are about GAA, and they're on the other side of the Atlantic, and they're desperately trying to keep it going, to pay money for players to come out just to keep their love of GAA alive. They might be willing to spend $100,000. That doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it right to shake them down. And they're all wealthy men because they've made it big in the construction industry in the 80s, and anyone I've gone out to would all have very wealthy construction owners involved in every club. So there's loads of them out there. Like, we built Irish built America, we know that, right? So, like, I mean, just because the money's out there, I don't think it's right to shake them down like that and pay $10,000 to sit with David Brady.
Well, I don't know.
Potentially.
I don't see your problem, Willie, with an unforgettable evening celebrating our heritage and building a brighter future for Mayo and the greater Mayo community. That's all I could see.
What a load of nonsense. Now, I could understand, right, say if Dublin went out there, and you know Sam Maguire always goes out there, and that's right, and that's not, they're not charging for that. That's to bring Sam. So if Stephen Cluxton goes out with Conor Callaghan, Kieran Kilkenny, and if Sam Maguire there, and that's at a function and there's big tickets being sold for that, I can kind of understand where, you know, why people would pay for that. But what's this Mayo thing offering, really, realistically, outside shaking them down, outside of the love of GAA and the wealth? Do you understand my point?
Yeah, I know.
I'm making it clearly.
And
it's,
just,
it's not. It's make it, and Kerry do the same thing. It's not. This is not unique to Mayo. Anyone that that can do it is doing it. But they're just. I think they're taking advantage of Irish people in America.
It could be a joke as well, but I heard there was a platinum package available for $50,000. So you'd want to be getting a place on the bench for that for the next day.
But I find it hard to sympathise with somebody who's willing to pay $10,000 to sit with David Brady for a dinner.
Okay, well, we don't know if David Brady's travelling because I've said him twice now, but you definitely get our point. We're talking about a grade Z X player like David Brady.
But that's what I mean. Like, you know, but go to the game. Like, you know, like you know when people hike up the tickets and you feel sorry for fans who want to go watch the game. Like, they can still go watch the game. Just don't pay $10,000 to sit for dinner with a former player.
But it goes back to when Mayo were last out there, whether it was 2014 or 2009. I'm not sure. There was a fundraiser, and like it has been compared to the ones that Kerry do, and Kerry is obviously streamlined. They've been doing this for years. They get they get the big guns out, they got the O'Shea's out, etc. Whereas I think I could have heard something about like people that attended the last Mayo fundraiser over there being given tickets to a raffle on the way in, you know, that sort of way. It was really
kind of
old school amateur compared to, so like you said, like it's not exactly right, but like it's they're not the first county to do it.
No.
And they probably will get a lot of people that are going to kind of throw out that money to go to the fundraiser, as Colin said.
So. And we do know the type of financial pressure Mayo are under. Their travel expenses are off the charts. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, the cost to run the Mayo team, and most of it is done through fundraising. Like in comparison to Dublin, who fundraised something like $50,000. I think Mayo's fundraising was over a million or something,
crazy,
was it?
Yeah,
crazy
load,
stuff.
Yeah.
So we know for them to compete at the highest level. I understand why Mayo are doing it. The point I'm making is it doesn't really sit unbelievably comfortably with me. So there was really bad news this week that John Morrison passed away, and there was loads of tributes to John. I wouldn't have known John too well other than talking to him on the phone, really engaging, like, you know, lively, funny kind of individual. And like, I mean, he'll be badly missed judging by all the tributes. But like, I mean, I wasn't actually aware of some of the unorthodox training methods he had, like throwing balloons at Paul McGrain. I hadn't heard that before. I don't know if you lads had.
No.
So this was the feat to improve his fetching during the Armagh when they got to the All-Ireland. And the other one was he brought a skip to Derry training and told them to put all their negative thoughts in it, right? Or blasting out house music at Antrim training sessions. So he was larger than life. In Donegal, he gave the players nuts and told them to play like Brazil. Like, I mean, I'm not sure that, like, I mean, that might be politically incorrect at this stage. I'm not too sure about that. He also sent Valentine's cards to the Mayo footballers from Samantha, from Sam with Love. Like,
yeah,
I mean, he's just a quirky individual who liked to do things differently.
Yeah, there's a great quote from him. He used to write a column in the Gaelic Life, and there's a lovely quote that was going around there this week. It was, "You're all laughing at me because I'm different. I'm laughing at you because you're the same."
And he had
this whole like sort of positive mindset, and like that sort of really rubbed off on players. And like it did seem that he was able to. I know in Derry as well, he was with Mickey Moran, and they got to the All-Ireland semi-final. But Derry, who always had all these problems, especially with the bigger players and stuff, he seemed to be always able to get boys on board. He seemed to manage personalities.
Yeah,
and like just as amazing influence, like, you know, like even like opposition. There's a great tweet from Sean O'Sullivan. He was playing Derry in a league game, and he said John Morrison, he was on the bench, John Morrison was remonstrating with the linesman. I was a sub, told him to sit down. He turned around and said, "Pipe down, monkey face." And, and the whole Kerry bench broke down laughing at me. Like, you know, so even opposition people had this sort of affinity with him as well. Like,
yeah.
You know,
it strikes me that it was great. It must have been great fun to be involved in a John Morrison thing.
I would think that too.
Everything
yeah.
he did seemed to be enjoyable, fun. He was like obviously a real innovator. I mean, some of those ideas, I mean, if the team is winning, they're probably, you know, described as genius. If they're losing, it's like, who's this fella? what's this madness? But like, just it seemed that way in Mayo as well, and we're never going to forget him for that. Like the way he reacted to that little Pillar Caffrey dunt in the back during the melee at the Hill that time, he just laughed in his face.
It was the greatest reaction. Like, he almost loved it. Like, you know, just had, like, I remember Mickey Moore was trying to get Mayo back up to the other side.
Yeah, he was really panicked. Yeah,
and Morrison was just loving all this.
Yeah, because they had no part in that. That was done behind their backs.
Yeah.
So definitely done behind Mickey Moran's back. But he was explaining the balloons thing, anyways. I think this was from an interview in the Irish Times. He says the reason for the balloons was that they just hung up there, and they gave him a chance to get his radar right. With anything like that, you have to be really willing in order to break down your game and reconstruct it. Paul wanted to know what he could do. Like, I don't think there's enough coaching. I'm not sure if I agree with the balloons thing as such, but at least it's trying to coach and it's identifying what your problem is. Apparently, McGrain used to catch the ball back behind his head instead of catching it out in front of him. And like, this was identified by Morrison. I've never once heard a manager identify, I've terrible issues catching the ball over my head. It was never said to me. I just stay out of that zone.
I just don't.
Because I just can't really do it. But even whether that balloons thing works or not, it stops you and thinks and tells you, right, well, that's wrong. So immediately you're pointed out, well, you catch it behind your head, so you're not actually looking at the ball right. So even if the balloons thing is silly, it stops you chatting with him about your problem and about how to potentially fix it. And even if he doesn't have the answer, you might work out what the answer. And it might not work, but it might work.
Yeah.
Do you know, and there's, I don't think there's enough of that. And because I don't think coaches have enough confidence. Like, the way you look at it, how can a lot of coaches might have played corner forward, they can't really coach midfielders. Do you know that kind of way? So Morrison obviously had enough confidence in himself to be able to tell a McGrain, here, you're not doing that right. I love that.
Yeah, just proper coaching. And it was very renowned as well, just for devising his own little games for training. Like, apparently the warm ups were all games and stuff as well, but he would sit down and talk to Mickey Moore or whoever it was about how the team wanted to play, and he just always came up with these new games, and players were always engaged then when they came into training. Just real coaching.
Yeah, so he's a huge loss to the GAA, and sympathies to his whole family. Finally, we have a quote from Paddy Cullen, Dublin legend, and I think it will just leave it at this. So this is Paddy Cullen, Dublin legend, who's just pretty much going to end any debate that there ever was. Not that there was even, should have been a debate, or should have been even any sort of over and back about this. Paddy Cullen, quote, "There is a definite advantage in Croker." By Croker, he means Croke Park, the national stadium. "There's a definite advantage in Croker. Everybody knows it. The dogs in the street know it." We'll be back with David Tuberty.
I don't really know too many more. Me and him were like best friends when we played, you know. He's seen the light of Jesus, and I'm still like fighting the devil, you know. The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run.
So Clare beat Cork for the third time in a row last weekend, and a man who scored 1-7 in that game and 1-7 in the game before that. David Tuberty joins us on the show now. I got your number off Gary Brennan, David, and he described you as like a fine wine.
I think I've been described by a lot of people like that at the moment, so that's not too bad, I suppose.
Yeah, because you're after having a great start to the league. Like, I mean, you got 6 against Donegal. 3 of those were from play. We know how difficult it is to score from play against Donegal. So, like, I mean, you're only 32. Sometimes we can be too quick to write players off when they hit into their 30s.
Well, I'll hold on. I'm 31 at the moment, so I'll try and hold on as long as I can to 31 for another few months. But no, it's great. I'm enjoying football at the moment now. I suppose the last couple of years, injuries have been a big problem for me. And at the start of the year this year, I didn't know whether I was going to come back and play football at all this year. I said to Cullen that I have to start out my injuries first before I come back and play. And thank God I got the injuries sorted. I went down to Jerkeen and Kerry, which great man, and he got me sorted. And he told me I would be ready for the league, and I was. And I'm enjoying it at the moment now, so...
Brilliant. What did you need to get sorted when you say injuries? Were they all linked or?
The last few years I've had a lot of injuries. I suppose I tore my groin there, tore my abdominal wall there about 4 or 5 years ago. They kind of got them sorted and then kept picking up niggly injuries, and probably 2 years ago I picked up my Achilles, which was giving me a bother for the last year and a half, I suppose, 2 years. And it was just getting worse and worse. And come the end of the club championship last year, I just thought that I might have to just pack it in with the county. And thank God I got it sorted, and enjoying things at the moment. So.
Right, fantastic. So what has he helped you do to get it sorted? Is this just a medical thing or a rehab thing that you weren't doing, you know, well? Or how did that work?
I just wanted to see what could I get done. And he actually sent me up to Century, up to NFLV, and he gave me a program, and then I came back down to Jerkeen again. He gave me another lengthy program, and I suppose 2 months I spent in the gym, probably go 3 times a week, trying to get the Achilles started just by strengthening it and stuff like that. And Yeah, it seems to have worked so far. So fingers crossed.
Well, that's the thing. When you've niggly injuries, you're not able to be out training all the time. You might miss the odd game and you can't get that momentum and, you know, get that confidence going. Like, we were saying on the show here recently, there's no better confidence that you can have than knowing that you're 100% fit and flying it.
Yeah. And that's how I feel right now, is 100% fit and just nothing bothering me or anything like that. So it's... I suppose I can see it in the way I'm playing at the moment, and the confidence is, as you said, is every game. You build confidence every game. So, just going well so far.
So talk to us about this sideline last-minute goal. Did you spot the goalkeeper off his line, or are you going to try and talk us into that, or what was it?
I suppose just beforehand, I kicked a point from the exact same angle.
Sorry to cut you off. I'm sure everybody knows by now it's against Armagh. You're in injury time. You're 4 points down, and you have two. You scored 1-1 from two sidelines.
I went over, just grabbed the ball, I suppose, and it was. I just asked the linesman. I said, "How long is left?" And he goes, "Probably about." We were in the 35th minute. He said, "There's probably about 2 minutes left." So I said, "If I kick it over the bar from here, bring it back to three, and might have a chance from the next kick out." Went over the bar, and I think we came down the right hand side again, and I think ball went out at the same side. But the funny thing was, just before I kicked the point, the one to bring it back to three, there was an Armagh supporter started shouting at me and said, more or less, well, what do you think you're doing? And so I kicked that ball over the bar, and it was nearly the same supporter was shouting at me for the next one. He goes, I bet you won't do it again. I suppose I didn't do it again, but I got one better. I got a goal, I suppose.
And did you just try to float that in and hope to get Gary Brennan maybe flicking it on in or something? You know, I think it was a flick on, was it? Or it went through their own midfielder's hands, was it? And it fooled their own goalkeeper?
I just saw Gary coming in, and I said, I'll just lob it in, try and get it as close to the goal as properly as I can. And I thought Gary punched it in until after the game. I asked him, I said, "Geez, fair finish." And he goes, "No, I didn't touch it anyway." So he said it was the person behind him who was coming in, just hit it and probably hit the post. I don't actually know what happened after that. It hit the post and go over the line. But Gary was just on the line. He was adamant that it was a goal anyway. So we'll take the point.
Definitely. No, you definitely would. And then two good ones the week after. So, it's your third year now in Division 2. So you've established yourself, because the danger always when you come up from Division 3 is that you go straight back down. You haven't done that. But this year, I'm sure, when you look at the division, it's harder than ever. You know what I mean? It's a dogfight in there. Like, we were saying, there's 2 points separate the first seven teams this year. You know what I mean? It's a crazy division.
Yeah, it is. It's a tough division now. I suppose last week we were thinking that the win against Cork might bring us up the table a bit and give us a bit of leeway from the relegation zone. But Tip had a great win over Donegal, and Fermanagh beat Kildare, which is a great result. So as you said, there's only 3 points between from first to last, and it's competitive events. And like, and I suppose the thing about it is now that we've 4 games left, we've 3 of them away from home, which would be an uphill battle, but we're looking forward to it now and looking forward to the games ahead of us.
Yeah, because since Colm Collins' arrival in 2014, you've had a huge just improvement every single year, and even the style of play for Clare. So you hear Rory Gallagher, for example, talking about, well, we don't have the resources or the panels to be able to compete, so we play with 14, 15 men behind the ball, and that's his excuse. Like, Colm Collins could probably have gone down that road as well, but he didn't. And forwards like yourself are flourishing, and others as well, whereas we look at Fermanagh and Tomás Corrigan, who was on the show here, and he's gone off the panel. He says, "You're better off being a wing back now." Do you know what I mean? I think for Colm to have done that with what was a county coming out of Division 4 and get up to 2, you know what I mean? I don't think that achievement should ever be underestimated.
No, I suppose the first ever meeting we had with Colm was, it was the West County, and he just brought us all in, and I think there was about 30, 40 players there at that time, and he'd set out the goals for what he had planned for the next few years. And I remember him saying clearly that he said, "I know you're a top 16 team, and that's where I want to get you to, as a top 16 team. You should be playing Division 1, 2 football." And that was the first year he set out. I suppose he's over Cratlow here in Clare, and he knows the footballers in the footballers throughout the county in and out, and he's been brilliant bringing young fellas through to the senior panel and giving them a chance. And you've seen it the last couple of years, like the likes of Jamie Malone, Owen Cleary, Keenan Sexton, Pierce Lillis, all these boys are really, really flourishing under Colm Collins. And the football is it's enjoyable to play. I suppose, thank God, he didn't go very defensive, or would be isolated up the front. But I'm enjoying every bit of it under Colm Collins. I think Clare football has a lot to owe Colm for what he's done for the last couple of years.
Yeah, it definitely does, and it's nice to have those young fellas. Most of them are forwards that you mentioned, and they have the legs, yeah, and they're flying it. Like, did you know these lads are all coming up through the ranks, or has Colm kind of turned water into wine here?
I suppose. I would have known a lot of the players, and like Owen Cleary, he's been always a very top, one of the top footballers in the county, and he's improving every year, as you see. And he's actually a big loss for us at the moment. Now he probably won't be back for another game. But Jamie Malone, I wouldn't have known him underage, but
really?
once he came in with Colm Collins, you could see the talent he had was unbelievable. And as I said, he's like Owen Cleary, he's improving every game as well. Same as Keenan Sexton, they're all improving every year, and I suppose that's the competition they're up against in Division 2 and stuff like that. The games are getting there and all that kind of stuff, so it can only be good for Clare football.
You're getting shafted on the Munster Championship draw every year. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Well, 16, 17, 18, and I'd say you looked at the draw this year, and again, you have Waterford instead of Limerick. Usually it's Limerick, then Kerry. Like, there isn't, it hasn't been seeded since 2013, but you're still getting shafted by getting Kerry, like, since your improvement. Do you know what I mean? When you kind of deserve,
yeah,
to avoid them and get into a Munster final, which absolutely the last 4 years you deserve to be in one.
I suppose, yeah. I was looking at the draw. Myself and my father were sitting in the kitchen, and the minute the draw came out, I said it was a few Fs given to the TV and stuff like that again this year.
It's weird, though, Kerry, isn't it? 4 years in a row to meet Kerry in the semi-final.
It is. We haven't got there yet now.
No disrespect.
We could play Waterford first. But you see the talent that Kerry have every year, and listen, Colm, what he wants is a Munster Championship, and I think that's the goal he set out the last couple of years as well. That after getting out of Division 4 and 3, that our next step is to win a Munster Championship, and the players are fully behind him, that believe that we can win a Munster final. And I suppose to beat Kerry would be an unbelievable achievement. But I think we can do it. Like, and I think he's building a panel of players this year that can give account for themselves again if we can get through to the Kerry game in the semi-final.
Yeah, you mentioned your father there, Tommy. He played for Clare back in his time, and obviously would be a big influence on your career because he's been involved with Doon Beg, your club, as a manager and selector. So did he take you up along through the underage ranks, or did you just kind of be managed by him at senior?
He started me out here. I suppose we have the bar here, and I suppose when I was younger, he used to get me out to get a football and kicking ball left and right.
Yeah,
when I was younger.
I saw an interview of him from him there, and he says, "I got him to kick the ball with both feet, and it stood him in good stead." So he's taking the credit for your stylish, effortless left and right being completely equal.
Yeah, he always says to me that. He always says to me, come a game that when you're stuck on your left leg, it might come in handy. So it has come in handy the last couple few years. So, he's coaching, I suppose. Underage, he wouldn't have really managed me. It only when he got to senior, he was really our manager. But he was always a great influence on me and getting me through the years, and I suppose keeping me level-headed as well. I suppose he's saying as always, a clap in the back is not too far away, kick up the arse. So he keeps me grounded most of the time anyway. So
yeah, I think that's important. I was reading another thing there that he built an AstroTurf pitch out the back. So I'm not sure, is that out the back of the pub or out the back of your home house? That was in 2006, and he's saying that helped you develop your skills a bit further.
yeah, it's It's an AstroTurf he built back then. I suppose a lot of people were telling him he was crazy back then to build an AstroTurf in West Clare. You'd get no business or anything, but it actually took off for 4 or 5 years. So, he actually gives the underage club here, he gives them access to free charge, and that's where we do some of our training. That pitch is closed at the moment, but most of our training for underage is all done here, so which is great. But yeah, I suppose you'll take the credit for that as well, I suppose.
So how big, where is it? Is it about the back of your house, or how big is it? Or
well, we have a bar and restaurant here, and we have a caravan park down the back.
Ah, it's out the back there.
It's just here. It's a 40 by 30 AstroTurf pitch, so it's fully lit. So it's fairly busy now during the winter time and when the rain is coming down, so it's a great help.
I don't know if you've read Andre Agassi's book, but it's absolutely brilliant. And when I was reading about the AstroTurf pitch and you out the back practicing on it, I was thinking of that. Andre Agassi's father used to have him out the back playing tennis into this with this machine that used to shoot the balls back out at him. So I don't know if it's as extreme as that.
No, I just kick it off the wall, I suppose. It's the only thing that's come back to me.
I think it was the dragon or something Agassi used to call this tennis ball thing anyways. But anyways, what was the other thing I want to talk about? You're Ryan Tuberty's cousin. I couldn't believe it when I read that, because when you think of Tuberty, you think of Ryan Tuberty. But I don't know why I was surprised to hear that you were related to him.
I'd say some bit far out, I'd say. We wouldn't be close cousins, but he's been down to the bar here a few times, and he's come in and visited us. So it's great to, Dad usually throws his name out there sometime when we're talking to people in the bar and stuff like that.
I was going to say if he's your first cousin, you could ring him up before sporting interviews where he might be a little bit weaker on and give him a heads up. You're big into all your sport. Come here, I also heard your this is nearly like the second part of this interview is nearly an interview about your father, because he was on News Talk recently and he was singing Donald Trump's praises with the golf course down there in Doombeg.
He's I suppose he's kind of a big fan of Trump, I suppose.
Was he calling him Donny, no?
Oh, I don't know about that. No, did he call him Donny, no?
Yeah, I thought I heard that. Have you met Trump down there, no?
I haven't met Donald, no, but I've met Eric and the brother, Don Jr. The sons are very nice fellas.
Really?
We talked with them. They came down to the village here and they visited the village and came to all the pubs and restaurants and... fierce down to earth people. I haven't met Donald yet now, but there's talks of him coming over in December now, which is I think Tommy will get excited around November time again, and all the news crews will probably come around.
Go on.
He actually called it the night of the election.
Go away.
He said he'll win it. Yeah, he called it a couple of weeks beforehand. He said Donald Trump will win that he'd be the next president of America. And I went upstairs that night to tell him he'd won it. He was delighted the following day.
Jeez, he's a big Trump. And the golf club sends shuttle buses down into the town, into the bars and all of the guests, which is a nice little thing to do.
Yeah, the golf course has been massive help for Doombeg and I suppose West Clare here. I suppose for the businesses around, it's such a small village. We've got 5 pubs and 3 restaurants that are all open during the summer. I suppose if we didn't have the golf course, I think Doombeg would be in big trouble. And I don't think a lot of people don't realise the effect the golf course has on us here. And it's just going from strength to strength, and they want to expand up there as well. And there's people objecting to this and stuff like that, which is disappointing, because the local community are 100% behind what the Trumps want to do up in the golf course, and it's just disappointing, people from outside objecting and stuff like this.
Right.
Disappointing.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, do you think Trump gets a really hard time?
Well, I don't know about the politics side of it or anything like that, but what he's doing here in Doombeg, I think it's all the objections and stuff like that are going against Donald Trump here and his business, the golf course. I think that's just because of his name, I think.
Yeah, it's not the locals.
No, it's not. No, the locals are behind him. They want to protect the asset above there in the golf course. And as I said, it's a great help for the golf course. It's a great help for the village here in Doombeg. So we'll back him anyway.
There you go. There, at least he has backers down in Doombeg. Anyway, come here. I won't take up too much more or any more of your time, David. Thanks very much for taking the call, and we'll talk to you again maybe during the year.
Perfect, Colin. Thanks very much. Thanks for the call.
He goes, if you boys are doing God's work, you can do whatever you want in the field. And I kinda, for me, that was a free pass.
A smile, so when you say Mickey takes it to another level, what will he be doing this week?
An extra decade of the rosary. I know you're my every tomorrow,
and I know that you'll always be. You know, Tyrone are queer hawks in the final, and a hawk is a queer bird. We've got the world tonight.
Let's hold on together. Paddy Power predictions. So we don't have that many games this weekend. I might throw in the two Sigerson games as well. But the big one of the weekend is on at 1:30 on Saturday. So remember that time. It's a little bit earlier. Not to miss it, because the big one is on first, realistically. Corrafin are 4-11, Gwydor 11-4. I think Gwydor are a great price for this. Now, I fancy Corrafin, but I don't have them Gwydor 3-1 outsiders to win this. I think they have a game that can really hurt Corrafin. We saw in the Galway County final how difficult Corrafin found it to break down Michael Daly's club, Mullinabaw or what?
Mount Bellew.
Mount Bellew. And, Gwydor have players that can absolutely hurt them. They have a running game that can hurt Corrafin. They have runners, Darrow Boyle, they have Keane Mulligan, they have Carroll out around the field foraging. He's a big, strong runner. Then, they have Eamon McGee at centre-half back, who's a stopper. Kevin Cassidy playing well. He'll have a great battle with Kieran Fitzgerald. That'll be worth the admission fee, and they're both touching on 40. This is not a 3-1 game.
Yeah, I'd say you're right. And just, I know Cross McGlen aren't where they're at, but like just how easily like Gwydor swatted them aside, and that was the sort of game that sort of fed right into them. Like,
and Cross McGlen's game plan and Corrafin's game plan wouldn't be a million miles
exactly
apart.
Yeah.
Corrafin would be a bit smarter than Cross McGlen were that day, and I'm sure they'll have learned the lessons of the Cross McGlen video. But at the same time, I get your point. And Scotstown are a bloody good. Now Corrafin are on that super club level with Dr. Crokes, and that's probably been reflected in the price from Paddy Power.
Because I would still have Corrafin ahead, but you're right, like the 3-1 is just, it's too long, and just how easily like Gwydor are running through teams. Like they're probably the best running club team that I've seen in a long time.
They're Donegal, it just comes second nature to them. I think Gwydor will go more defensive than we've seen them, and I think they'll play their running game an awful lot more. They like to get it into Cassidy, but I think they'll run it an awful lot more against Cor. I think they'll get a lot more bodies back. I think they'll have seen the Galway County final, and we might not be expecting a classic. We won't see the Corrafin forwards getting loads of space.
If they are to identify one game that they could possibly hurt Corrafin from, it would be that first county final when Mount Bellew should have won that. We forget that Micheál Lundy was left on his own right beside the goal just to fist it over to get the equaliser. So I think that they'll have time to fine tune the system as well, like kind of since the Ulster final, if they've finally got over the celebrations. They've had 6 weeks to 2 months to kind of fine tune a system like that. And it's not as if they're going to be playing Corrafin in Croke Park either. They'll be playing in Carrick.
That's a big
Shannon,
thing
which
too
be kind of a tighter pitch because of it. The only thing I'll say is that like Corrafin obviously now have experience. I'm sure they have loads of experience of playing against that system. I haven't seen other clubs play in Galway against them because they're so big and so good.
Who was it I asked that? I think it was Kieran Fitzgerald or one of them, and he went, no, we wouldn't. Not that many clubs would play against them. It was after the county final. Right. I think it was Ian Burke maybe or someone. It was one of them anyway, and he was kind of like, no, not that many set up like that.
I suppose they have it against Mount Bellew in those two games, and I think the Corrafin might be better suited to handle that sort of game than Cross McGlen, where I think they're very good kind of. Obviously their forward line is talked about a lot, but they have some really good kind of defenders as well that I think will be better able to cope with that running game, where it's Kieran Malloy and Liam Silk. So I agree with you. I don't think it's a 3-1 game, but I'm still fancying Corrafin.
Yeah, you can see Liam Silk or you can see Malloy following whatever runner, but you can see Liam Silk or somebody like that just holding the centre back position, or one or two of them. They'll be just a lot smarter. They'll be a lot smarter than Cross McGlen, for example, were against Gwydor. And like, we know their forwards. Now their forwards don't. This is the thing, Corrafin love a kicking game. They have a distinct style, and it's getting it in, and Ian Burke. And it's similar to like when Galway have Ian Burke. If you have Ian Burke showing, you get it to him and you work off him.
Yeah.
If that option is taken off Cara Finn, to me, and again, even against Ballintubber in the first half, they didn't look overly comfortable when they can't kick it, and they're playing that slow build-up game. It's not in their DNA to play a slow build-up game, Cara Finn. They get, you can see they're almost visibly getting frustrated.
Yeah, and then they do have to worry about Kevin Cassidy because he just keeps you honest. Like, so you can't really go gung ho and try to get through this team. You have like, because that's what Guido will do. They don't do it too often, but they will just kick it 70 yards down to Kevin Cassidy, who will win it. So when Cara Finn are going forward or whatever they're trying to do, this back door is just going to be open, and they have to sort of, I don't know, be mindful of that. It's going to be a very interesting one. I was sort of thinking I would put Kieran Molloy into midfield just because of the running power of O'Beale in there. Like, you know what, I'd just be worried about him, and he, apparently by all accounts, he's ripping it up in training as well. Like, he's in great form.
And McNeilish needs to be man marked. If they put up Steed and Brady against McNeilish and O'Beale, I think that might be a mistake because it's not like O'Beale is a brilliant fetcher or anything, but he's on the ground, he's great. And McNeilish, while he is a stylish fetcher, it's on the ground, he hurts you more as well. You nearly want two wing backs on those fellas.
Yeah, they're quite athletic though, aren't they? Brady,
they are athletic,
Seed,
but they don't want to man. Midfielders don't want to do that job, you know? They just don't. They want to just get out there, win your possession and get you ticking over. Like, to ask a midfielder to do a man marking job is almost an insult.
Yeah.
Like, they take it pert. They'd be like, what? I'm a midfielder, mate.
Yeah.
Like, who's going to get his possession?
Darboy got three goals against Crossmagan, didn't he?
Three. That was the thing about Jack Barry on Fenton. Like, there's not many midfielders will give up their game to follow somebody around.
Yeah, and that's the flip side. Kieran Molloy could be hurting them on the other direction.
He could give them something to think about,
McNeilish would be like, I'm not going after McNeilish. Exactly. I'm not running after him all game.
You actually flip it, or you flip it the other way around.
Yeah.
You know, instead of them having the power and you just turn it around and go attack them.
Hammer the hammer, isn't that what Jack
Hammer the hammer,
to
that's Tomás O'Shea says that, is it?
A Kerry phrase.
It's a Kerry thing,
yeah.
It's a Kerry thing. So that's worked well for them. So what do you think, predictions here, lads? Like we said, Carrick on Shannon, like the weather is, I think it's 15 degrees tomorrow, so we might it's very mild, and I don't know if rain's forecast, and nearly it's always raining in Leitrim, so we never know what the ground is going to be like. But what do you think of this one? We'll start with you there, Connor.
I'm going for Cara Finn. I'd go for less than 3 points, but I'm going for Cara Finn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a decent bet, like Guido minus three or Guido plus three.
Plus three.
I'd go with Cara Finn as well.
Yeah, I'll go Cara Finn as well. But a really close game, whether it's a classic or not is another story. It could be one of these tactical games. And I keep reminding you about Cassidy and Fitzgerald. So I was reading about this because Fitzgerald did the media day. It's actually gas. So Fitzgerald did the media, Cassidy did the media day, and Mulligan from Mullin Ahachtas. So they've all been on the show. So I was like, geez, there's no point in me going to that. And it was Fionn Fitzgerald. Actually, we haven't interviewed anyone from Dr. Crokes. We'll have to get somebody on Monday from them. So, like, I mean, they were on an all-star touring party together in 2003. Gas, isn't it? They both won All-Stars in 2003. Fitzgerald's second year cornerback and Kevin Cassidy's one of his early years as a wing back, and Cassidy's now at full forward, and that's a lot of players follow that.
Yeah,
Fitzgerald has just been steady, just moved into the full back role, and he's talking about, like, Fitzgerald is going grey, like he's almost 40, he'd been around my age, like. But he's talking about the young lads, and he says he feels a little bit almost like part of the management team rather than the team out there. I can completely identify with him at my age now. But we're all going for Cara Finn, but not by too much. So the other one then, lads, this is the second one. It's on TG Cahir as well. It's on at 3:30 in Semple Stadium. I don't know why the other one didn't get the second
top billing,
the top billing, when it's much closer, because Dr. Crokes are 1-14 here against Mullin Ahachta, and we know what a brilliant story they had against Kilmacud Crokes. Kilmacud Crokes got their tactics all wrong in the second half with a strong wind. But, like, I mean, it's hard to look past any team that has the talent.
Yeah.
The gas thing about Dr. Crokes is you look through their team, and who's guaranteed to be on the Kerry team? Gavin White. Outside of that.
Yeah, Micheál Byrne started last year.
He's not guaranteed,
He's not
guaranteed. And White's not guaranteed now with Thomas Sullivan playing so brilliantly at left half back. So it's incredible. These are as good a club team as I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And there's no one you would say is 100%. And this is why often with Kerry as well, you say, oh, Kerry, you're missing all the Crokes lads, and they're missing Clifford. look at the Kerry team the other night. They're missing very few guaranteed starters, really, only Clifford.
Yeah.
Or am I missing anybody else? They're not too much. Jason Foley might end up getting on it. But, like, I mean, this is the thing. It's very, very unique in that it's a super club. It has a forward line that just destroys you. And maybe Young Shaw might get on the Kerry team in time. He looks I like him.
Yeah.
Tony Brosnan's been
Tony
in and out.
Brosnan.
But I suppose if you've got all their forwards except for Gavin O'Shea would have played senior for Kerry at some level. So when you've got five of them, they might not be guaranteed starters, but this is almost like an inter-county B team.
But I think they benefit from that. Like, we've talked about Ballymun here before and how they often suffer from, they have James McCarthy, Dean Rock, John Small, you know, really established Dublin county players, and they suffer a little bit when they come back because they haven't been there during the year.
Yeah.
Whereas the lads that are on the, like Dahi Casey's been on the fringes, well, Micheál Byrne started last year, Fionn Fitzgerald and the Gooch, maybe Johnny Buckley as well, they're only real proper established Crokes players. So they haven't, I suppose, that the with the other players, they might be on the panel for a little bit of time and then might be able to go back to Crokes and kind of dedicate their time there. So I think they benefited from that. But yeah, just when you look at that, when you look at that forward line and the fact that, like, Gooch is on, I know he's gone, you know, past his best, but still coming off the bench for him is just, it's just crazy.
It is. And maybe even with these fellas that aren't guaranteed starters, they always have something to prove.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas the inter-county lads that have won stuff coming back to club, whether you like it or not, it's probably not their priority for that year. Whereas these fellas who, there's no year I've played better for Portlaoise than when I've had a problem on the county team, because I really wanted I really wanted to piss them off and go, now look, you never gave me a chance and look what I, you know, and that, don't think players don't think that. So maybe these brilliant players who haven't quite been stars for Kerry just have that little bit extra that they're like, here, look what we do at club level.
Oh, every year, you see, every time I see Dahi Casey, it's like, how has he not got more games?
Yeah.
When I see him play for Crokes, I think he's outrageous.
And your man Looney's top class.
Yeah, Looney as well.
Wing forward, attacking wing forward. They're really, they're just such an exciting team to watch.
Yeah.
And they do get a few bodies back as well. Like, I mean, it's not like they're, but what they do, every transition, or the majority of their transitions, is kicked through the foot. And it's moved down the field before the other team can start moving lads back. And when that's moved through the foot, suddenly you have lovely diagonal balls to the full forward line. They maybe leave four forwards up and two men on the half forward line, the exact system I love. And when it gets to the fella on the half forward line, he doesn't dwell on it. He's turning around, a diagonal ball, full forward line, and someone's running off them. There's always, it's just, it's really exciting to watch.
Dublin at their best when they can move it from back to forward, just kick.
Just really fast. Mm. And when you do that, there's no defensive team going to get back before the ball gets back. And that's the message we kept. It was even last year, it was 2 years ago, we were trying to hammer home that message. It just doesn't get, it doesn't get through, like, but it's just logical that if a team is pushed up on you and attacking you and you break them down, you're going to get down the other end faster kicking it down than you are bloody running down, because they'll just stay tackling you when you're running it. If you kick it, they're all running back kind of, you know, behind the ball.
And it's your age old, the ball moves faster than the man.
Oh, it does. Move the ball fast, that's it. So we'll take predictions on this. Like, I mean, I don't want to be say nothing about Mullinahocta, who are a serious team. Patrick Fox, a fullback, was outstanding. He was man of the match. We know Shane Mulligan has obviously got Longford experience. He was on the show. And up front, they have some serious talent. Rian Brady's a player I really like. He was brilliant against Crokes, got three from play in the first half. James McGivney, who we all know as well. Like, they have players like Mullinahocta, Semple Stadium would not suit them. They would have preferred the Carrick on Shannon.
Yeah,
I don't want to be disrespectful for them, but they want this game to be a fight and a physical battle.
Yeah.
And they want it to be close, and they're going to get bodies back. There's no doubt about that. They don't want Semple Stadium, because Semple Stadium's too good a pitch for what they wanted for.
Yeah. I wonder how, like, Mickey Graham's been getting on with Cavan and then having to go back.
Well, that's another distraction as well that I hadn't thought of. Like, I mean, that's, I don't know how he's doing that.
Like, it's his first year with Cavan, like, in their Division 1, so he has to, like, dedicate most of his time to preparing for every single match and every single session for that.
Yeah.
So has to affect a little bit. Now, I'm not saying that he's not doing a big job for this game, but my God, like, you know, he's got too much on his hands with county management.
Yeah, he definitely does. So we'll go predictions here, lads. Connor?
Yeah, you have to get, like, again, 15-2, I think, is too strong for Mullinahocta. I think they were 5-1 against Crokes, but against Kilmacud Crokes, but I can see a relatively comfortable Dr. Crokes win here, like six points or more perhaps. Sorry to Mullinahakta, but
yeah. Crokes as well, yeah.
I can see the same. I can see it being about 5 or 6. I think Mullinahakta will play defensively and they'll try and frustrate them, but Dr. Crokes will be used to that, and I think they'll eventually get through by 6 or maybe 5, 6, 7 points range, I'd imagine. I don't know what the handicap, I didn't actually check that on Paddy Power. There's two Sigerson semi-finals as well. Do we know where these are on, lads? Were these actually
they're
fixed?
Both in Mallow and Cork.
They're both in Mallow, right, so there's no chance for the lads.
Well, no, actually Mallory can play, so the NUIG one has moved to the Sunday.
Yeah.
Oh, that they moved that? Yeah. No, well, that, at least that's a bit of common sense, yeah. Right?
But the UCD one is still on Saturday.
So why would that be?
But apparently that's because UCD didn't appeal it, and they did that because they didn't want Celtic to have to play two games. He was getting interviewed during the week and he's a bit annoyed still, but I think they were sort of doing it for his own benefit, like, you know, just play the one match and hopefully we'll see you in the final, sort
Jeez,
of thing.
Well, that's right. Cocky from UCD, isn't it? Yeah. Look, we don't want Liam Silk, right?
So up in the St Mary's dressing room.
I didn't like UCD in my playing days. They're too cocky. They were always cocky. I played for Maynooth, and you play against UCD and they've got this kind of think they're great, and they hadn't won the Sigerson for bloody years. They had no reason to be cocky, but I didn't like them.
Yeah. No, they didn't give that as a reason. This is me suggesting that.
They're too cocky. You just have to trust those two games I played against them, and I know exactly the culture in UCD, right? I'm joking, but like UCD are obviously strong, probably strong favourites. Although Mary's are the holders, right? Mary's won it, was
no,
it last
they
year?
Won it 2017. UCD won it last
UCD
year.
Last year, yeah. Right,
interesting, okay. Though, Conor Myler, who was the captain of St Mary's, is now with UCD.
Is he? Yeah.
Yeah, so he captained Mary's to their only Sigerson title, and now he's playing UCD wing forward.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Stephen Cohen is still captain, I think, from Mayo as well. He was captain last year, too.
Right, and this other one then is a toss up. So UCC, a lot of the Kerry lads go there, and like, I mean, they UCC are always strong. And NUIG, like, they knocked out Jordanstown, right? So, like, I mean, I'm not sure the betting on that one. Really should have checked those out before we start talking about them. But you know, I would have thought from not following it very closely that UCD NUIG final.
Yeah, go for my alma mater NUIG and UCD as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Like UCC, like Paddy Clifford is ripping it up for them. So David's older brother.
Yeah, he's an IT tree, David, isn't he? So it's the brother in UCC. Yeah.
And Evan Courtney from Clare, like, so he's doing a lot of damage for UCC. And Sean O'Shea, obviously, scoring 12 points a game. But yeah, I'll go for NUIG as well. Your man Cian Darcy, the Galway midfielder, is destroying everybody.
Right, well, you've thrown three names out for UCC now. That
made you change your mind, yeah.
Jesus Christ, I should have just looked at their team sheet there before I've done that. Anyway, so we'll go UCC. The NUIG. Are we all agreed on that?
Yeah.
All right. And we'll be back on Monday. We'll do a show and we'll look back at the club games. Talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.